Can I say before Loisos takes the ball and runs with it here? We would all fuck Aldis Hodge. I just wanna put that out there right now. That man is fucking sexy, man. I don't even just notice how attractive men are most of the time, but that dude's fucking sexy. Like, Jesus Christ. He looks like a goddamn, like, tank. Discuss.
The Epic Film Guys Podcast.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Epic Film Guys Podcast. And we are, Justin,
the movie podcast your mother warned you about.
I feel like we need like more creepy sound effects and everything in there. We're going to make Justin plaster that on literally everything, ladies and gentlemen. You'll be able to own a fucking drinking cup with that shit on there.
I'm trademarking that motherfucking shit.
Do it.
I'm telling you right now, that's happening. And ladies and gentlemen, I came up with that on the shitter. Look how creative you can be.
What the hell is wrong with you?
When you're sitting there, what do you have to do other than think, play with your phone, read a book? I mean, think up something. You know, come up with a patent idea.
Yeah, it's a fair
point. Use your imagination.
Whoa. Well, I'm
there. He is.
Damn.
Oh my God.
We shamed
him last
week. You're
gracing our presence?
We shamed
him
last week. But ladies and gentlemen, the God of podcasting.
And how dare you shame your God?
are we going to be punished? Daddy. I mean, am I going to get the belt for this?
No, you know what's
going
to happen?
You're certainly going to hell. You both are certainly going to hell.
God
absolutely.
Damn it.
Daddy's going to spank you with the belt.
Well, ladies
now.
And gentlemen, we are thrilled, absolutely thrilled to be here. And we've got a full spoilerific review. Spoilers, non-spoilers. We're going to delineate. We're building the wall. I already warned Loisos. He's already been fully prepared for Trump to start hauling bricks out. But we're going to be talking about Lee Whannell's Invisible Man. And I know Justin is super excited to talk about it. Justin's also wearing these gigantic glasses. And we use video. When we record, and his glasses are so fucking big, I could see his computer monitor reflected in both lenses, and
these
I can't even see his eyes.
Listen, these are new.
They're so big.
They're those blue blocks, the blue light blocking glasses.
The blue balls? I know what that's like.
I bought a few pair because my eyes are getting really fucking strained because, you know, I'm doing all this overtime at work. I'm constantly looking at screens at home, at work, when I'm watching movies. And so I thought it'd be a good idea to invest in these because apparently they save your eyesight. So I'm trying them out right now.
Those glasses look like they can see into the next dimension.
Right?
God damn.
That's what I feel like I'm looking at. Like, I feel like I'm looking like, am I seeing the future in there?
They're no more big than my regular actual glasses that I wear. I'm just trying to, you guys got to make fun of me about everything. Listen, I'm sure if I go down to Ned Devine's right now, there'll be some random redneck bitch in there that'll be like, I like your glasses. They look hot on you. So mm-hmm. In your face. Yeah. Okay.
Oh my Lord. But yeah, we've also got epic previews, ladies and gentlemen. Justin wants to talk about the new trailer for Candyman. Candyman.
Candyman.
Candyman.
Candyman.
Candyman.
Candyman.
Candyman. I did it. No, it's
he already did it. And it's funny because Loisos actually, for the first time ever, just watched the original Candyman all the way through.
I sure
did. Last Friday. Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
I've never seen it. It doesn't appeal to me.
Of course, you haven't.
It doesn't appeal to me. And I mean, we'll talk about it when we talk more about the trailer. But when I watched the trailer, I was like, I guarantee if I were Justin, I would be salivating watching this trailer. But it just didn't have that same effect on me because I just, you know.
You'll find out. You'll find out how there's a lot to be said when it comes to that movie. Oof. But ladies and gentlemen, we've got a lot of stuff to cover here. We haven't talked to you in a long time.
Please talk to me, please.
Huge news, gigantic news that landed since we've talked to you last time. Indiana Jones, Steven Spielberg has dropped out of Indiana Jones 5. Boy Sauce, take it from here. What's the story on this?
You must be kidding, aren't you?
I don't really know all the behind-the-scenes hubbub of what happened, but yes, Steven Spielberg is no longer a part of Indiana Jones 5, which is a movie that's still being made for some reason, I guess purely money reasons. And the replacement director that's been the name that's been bandied about is James Mangold, of course, the director of
I love it.
Such films as Walk the Line and Logan,
Ford v Ferrari,
which I can imagine a world in which a James Mangold directed Indiana Jones would just be like the most fucking amazing thing ever. The problem is, the movie in question is Indiana Jones 5. Is this a movie that needs to be made?
No. No movie needs to be made, Boy Sauce.
Do we want to see 89-year-old Harrison Ford running around as Indiana Jones?
Well, nobody wants to see him running around in front of green screens.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was questionable.
With fake dogs either, yeah.
It was questionable in 2008. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull came out. So what is this movie even going to be? What's it going to look like? The only thing you can really do is reboot it and cast a different actor as Indiana
Jones. And that's not what they're going to do. That's not the plan. So here's my take on this thing. I'm happy. I was disappointed at first, but I'm happy because that means Spielberg's heart's not in it. So he's exiting because of that reason. Harrison Ford's heart is in it, which I'll give him that much. When we've seen him in the past 5 to 10 years put his heart into roles and performances, he still shows that he's got that charisma, that wit, that charm that we've always loved about him. It's still present, regardless of his age. And he still looks and sounds like Harrison Ford. But this could be, as I said to our good friend Wes from Via VHS in the Hopesters Dumpster, our fan group, this could be what this movie needs. I mean, this really could be the saving grace of Indiana Jones 5. There could be something new and fresh. Ladies and gentlemen, Nick, Saucy, we've never seen an Indiana Jones movie that was not a Steven Spielberg directed piece. He's always had his hand in all of them. He's directed every single one of them. So it'll be very interesting to see.
And let's
what
not
they
mistake this.
I
mean, Spielberg is, I mean, this is still going to be executive produced by Spielberg. It's going to be released by DreamWorks. I mean, we're definitely still going to get a very Spielbergian hand in this. Like, Spielberg is definitely still going to have his hand in the cookie jar here, but I think that Mangold is a fantastic director. And I think, you know, I like the idea. I love the idea. I always love this idea of taking properties like this. If you're going to make an Indy 5, Loy Sauce, I do agree with you necessarily. Is this a movie that the world needs? Probably not, especially if we're going to get another Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which I was okay-ish with. I mean, it's not a terrible, terrible movie like some people say it is. Some people like lambaste it, pretend it doesn't exist. Like, I still think there's some fun elements to it. That are
the first two-thirds are very good. Yes.
Yeah, there's some entertaining elements of it that are at least entertaining to watch. But, you know, I think that if you're going to make an Indy 5, giving it to someone like a James Mangold, like, I mean, I see this in the very same vein that I see giving the Batman to Matt Reeves to. You're giving it to a very, very capable director who could do all sorts of amazing things with this. And let's not mistake this. Ford's not playing this character again. Now, don't give us Indiana Jones again, but you have to groom a replacement character in this film. You have to, if you're going to continue with this franchise, you have to give us the torch bearer that he's going to pass the torch to in this film.
Shia LaBeouf back.
Not Shia.
Why not?
Not Mutt. Although Shia, I don't know, he's at a point in his career now where I think it'd be a much better fit than maybe it was back in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. You never know. But nonetheless, somebody has to take the reins of this franchise. And I don't just mean, like, a lot of people have bandied about Chris Pratt's name for years for this role.
Well, that's never happening. I don't want it to happen. That's not happening now.
I don't like it. As much
now,
as I love Pratt, I don't want to see that happen. But, yeah, just I like the idea. If you're going to give this movie to anybody, a Mangold, I'm on board. I'm intrigued. I'm excited.
Well,
at
boys,
least this much, a little bit.
We're actually talking about this on the third anniversary upon which Logan was released into theaters. And I got to say, Hugh Jackman posted some rad behind the scenes pictures we have never seen before of him in Wolverine shape, fucking ripped as a
mother.
You must be
kidding, aren't you?
Claws out and all, and just saying how much he appreciates all the fans being there and how much he cares about that movie as a whole. And I made sure to post, you know, my time hop and the Epic Film Guys story on Instagram, where my critic quote was, "Logan is the best comic book movie since The Dark Knight." And I still stand by that. I still think it's one of the best comic book movies ever made. So Mangold is a brilliant director, and I can't wait to see what they have in store for Indiana Jones. I mean, it's got to be something special. I mean, he's definitely going to put something new and fresh. Yes, it'll feel Spielbergian, but we've seen movies that feel Spielbergian with new filmmakers at the helm, and there's always something fresh to be seen. So
I'm intrigued. But I did mention back in there, Justin, we never got your thoughts on it. And before we run away into a whole bunch of live stream for the Cure related stuff and a whole bunch of other things, we never got a chance to talk about the set picks that came out of basically kind of the full reveal of the Batsuit from the Batman. We got to see essentially what appears to be the full Batsuit, you know, what it's going to look like in Matt Reeves' Batman. I haven't really, you and I tried back and forth a few text messages about it, but other than that,
yeah, I sent you like 100 pictures. Like I sent you all the pictures.
Literally all the pictures. I mean, this is my life. I told you this, ladies and gentlemen, for the next like 16 months, but you know, let's talk about it just a little bit, because I think fan opinion is very divided, like it was when the initial Cowl screening came out. And we have yet to hear from the God of Podcasting on this. I would love to hear his thoughts on the Cowl and on the set pictures, exactly what he thinks of the suit.
Yeah, the suit looks good. It looks tactical. It looks like something he would kind of cobble together as I don't know if they're going like year one Batman, but
it's year two.
Okay, so very early Batman. At first, I wasn't exactly sure. It looked like the head was very like smooth and dome-like, which I didn't really like at first. But seeing it at other angles, and I imagine watching it in the theater with proper lighting and post-production and done on it, that it'll look pretty awesome and badass. But yeah, I'm fine with it. I'm good with a new take. I want to see it. Give it to me now.
I agree with what you said there 100%. I'm giving Justin blue balls, but I love how tactical the suit looks. I think it's a it's not nearly as armored looking, and it's not as busy. That was one of the things I said to Justin. It's not nearly as busy as Nolan's Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises suits. It's not nearly that visually busy. It's still got some busy elements to it, but I love how tactical it feels. Like this feels like a Batman who's like kind of going out at night, like prepared for war. And I kind of really like that. And I think that the helmet, like the cowl, whatever, I think that looks infinitely better in the set photos, because Justin, you said this when we talked about the cowl on the show, but you said, I want to see the ears. Now you've seen the ears. Now you've seen the full head, like in kind of, you know, in perspective. Now, where do you land on it? Because I know you were a little bit wary before.
Well, I was wrong. I mean, I was totally wrong. Like myself, among many, many other fans, were under the assumption that we were going to get the original Bill Finger, Bob Kane, like side swoop ears that made him look more like a demon than a bat. But we did not. We are going to get the straight up ears, which are not short. They're a lot longer. They're a lot thinner. And, you know, like I post this stuff on social media, on our pages and on my personal pages, before I even soak it in and give myself an opportunity to really develop an idea on how I feel. But overall, how I feel on the suit is that I'm giving it a chance. I don't love the suit. This is not the moment that I felt like when I saw, you know, the first full suit reveal of Batfleck suit, which is still, in my opinion, in the top three cinematic bat suits of all time, where you were like literally in awe over how beautiful and comic accurate it looked and how great Ben looked in the suit. What we've seen here, we have to take this into context. We've seen a stuntman in a stunt version of the suit. So this is going to look a lot different than what it's going to look like, you know, tight fitting the hero suit, as we call it in the film world, on Pattinson with the cape on and everything. Obviously, these set picks did not have a cape because this Batman is riding a motorcycle. Is Batman riding without a cape? Is it just going to be CG'd on? I don't know. We do know that the
I would assume they're
going
to do CG like they did for the Superman cape for Cavill.
I think so. I mean, the actor himself had like dots on his face, which leads us to believe that they're going to CG Pattinson's face in there. But overall, I agree with what you guys said. I like how tactical it looks. I like how makeshift it looks. I like it looks like what an early Batman would throw together, like, oh, this is going to work. You know,
it makes him look like a soldier in some regard.
Well, Nick, you're totally right. 100% on point with that. There were rumors that it was going to look very military based, and it definitely does.
100%.
I mean, my take on it at this point is I just want to see it in action. Now, we know this is going to be a noir driven movie. So I'm actually praying that Matt Reeves has this Batman cast in shadow on a constant basis. I want to see the silhouette and the eyes and half of the face. That's the one thing. And I know I preach this on the show week in and week out, but Burton nailed this, and none of the other people that handled Batman on film has done this, but he shot Batman as a creaturesque type of character where half his face is in shadows. They use the cowl to their advantage to make him look like a beast. And I want that again here. I don't want him to be standing in frickin' broad city lights just in this suit. It'll look silly to me. So I have faith in Pattinson as a performer and what Matt Reeves is bringing to the table as far as his interpretation. So the suit itself can be whatever. I'll give it this much. The gauntlets look fucking weird to me, because they're like those weird ninja, like, I forget what they're called. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, but they are throwing darts basically that are on his gauntlets. Who knows? But overall, I'm very open to the suit. I think it's fine. I don't hate it. I don't love it, but I'm okay with it at this point.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, to segue from that, and I want to jump over into a little bit of live stream for the Cure news. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, live stream for the Cure, our fourth annual event, $10,000 for the Cancer Research Institute. You've been hearing in the place of some of our Monday, so it's some stuff from last year's show to kind of start getting you jazzed up for the kind of content we're going to be getting live on the air this year. It's going to be absolutely amazing. Our biggest and best goal yet, $10,000 for the Cancer Research Institute. And not only Gerald is supposed to, I still don't know if he's going to or not. I'm pretty sure his wife's going to murder him before the event. So I don't know if he'll actually be here or not. But Justin, I am actually going to be joined live on site by a very, very, very special guest. Lindsay is actually flying up here to be live.
Oh my God.
On the event. I don't know exactly what days yet, so I will have to get back to you. But of course, she and her husband, Perry, were on the second year live stream for The Cure 2. Or 2.0, whatever we called it. I can't even remember what we called these events anymore.
It was 2.0. You like putting a 0.0 after 2.
But, you know, and of course, that was very shortly after his cancer diagnosis. And then he passed away before last year's event. And of course, she was on last year's event and just gave like that amazing like hour and a half where she just opened up about everything about what, you know, living with that was like and losing Perry and everything. And yeah, she's actually going to be live in studio in EFG North on the event. And I don't know what, she'll be bouncing in and out and guest hosting a bunch of segments or doing whatever else. I don't know, but I'm absolutely thrilled. I thought it was a great idea when she mentioned it to me. So yeah, it's going to be absolutely amazing.
That's honestly some of the best news that I think we've ever gotten for the event ever. I mean, in general, their whole situation, their family in general, what they went through was like such a huge inspiration for our event and them being a part of it. And then the year after, it was devastating, but it really, you know, hit home with why we do what we do and why we're doing this event. And it's so great to have her back to be a part of it. And they're in house with you, dude. I mean, that's gotta be so fucking exciting.
It's going to be absolutely amazing. So again, mark your calendars, ladies and gentlemen, May 27th, a 4-hour kickoff event, and then 48 hours from the 28th through the 31st. We're going to raise $10,000 for the Cancer Research Institute. I am still working on social media stuff. I started getting it all ready, and then, well, Loy Sauce decided to twuff it, and now I got to do it all over again.
Hey, he twuffed it.
So Twuffer, if you're not familiar with Twuffer, it is a, you know, web utility that you can use to schedule tweets like TweetDeck and like lots of others. There's tons of them out there. But apparently, like, I scheduled a whole bunch of social media stuff to all go live, like a whole bunch of tweets, and they got their Twitter access banned. So now they have no access to Twitter. So now we can't use Twuffer anymore. Although Justin is correct, it really does sound like a porn site, and we're going to have Loisos Twuff you all, every single one of you.
Yes. He's a twuffer.
So that stuff is coming. Justin and his wife are both very, very hard at work on the artwork. He tells me we're close, even though if he doesn't make, you know, the movie podcast your mother warned you about into posters and stickers and everything else, we're going to kill him. But we've got that. We've got all sorts of other amazing stuff coming down the pipe. Now is the time when really everything starts ramping up for this event as we start heading into the spring. We are under 3 months away from the beginning of the event now, and I cannot wait. I'm so excited. This is going to be our biggest and best year yet. We're going to hit our biggest and best goal yet, $10,000, and that's what we're going to raise on our fucking own. And once we double that, once we get that doubled by the Cancer Research Institute, $20,000 for cancer research until we live in a world immune to all forms of cancer. That's the goal. That's why we support the Cancer Research Institute, and that's why we want you guys to support this event.
Can you imagine a world immune to all forms of cancer?
Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come for our fourth annual live stream for the cure.
And this year, we need your help more than ever.
Please join us May 27th through May 31st for 48 hours of live content from guests and podcasts around the world.
We'll be aiming for our most ambitious goal to date as we try to raise $10,000 for the Cancer Research Institute.
Please visit www.livestreamforthecure.com for more information on this year's event and how you can be a part of it. Together, we can make a difference.
And I just want to take the opportunity to thank each and every one of you that came out for Terror Tuesday last week at Alamo Drafthouse, DC area, Ashburn, for our showing of Bram Stoker's Dracula. Loisos, it was our biggest Terror Tuesday screening yet.
It certainly was, if you could believe it. 137 people came out for Bram Stoker's Dracula, which is just, my mind is blown by that response. Considering how much we've grown in the last few months, it's really inspiring to see. It's almost become like a little community afterwards, too. People hang out and chat in the lobby afterwards and make friends and talk about how awesome Bram Stoker's Dracula is.
It's exactly what we were hoping for in the beginning on what it could become and what we really wanted it to be. And it's actually becoming a reality. We had new, old. It was the perfect movie, I think, to kind of bring a lot of different people together. And I mean, we had people there talking with us until almost midnight about the movie and about how much they care about horror cinema. And I mean, for me, this is why I do what I do. This is why I'm a huge part of Terror Tuesday and why I love doing it so much, because of the people, being able to spend time with the people that have the same passion for the material that I do. And Loisos, it was just so amazing me jumping out there in front of that huge crowd in Theater A at Alamo DC Ashburn, the biggest theater in the entire place, and seeing that kind of reaction to a horror film. I mean, again, it gave me goosebumps. So I just want to thank every one of you out there and remind you our next Terror Tuesday screening is The Howling. That's right, Joe Dante's werewolf classic on Tuesday, March 24th. That's the next film. Stay tuned for the film for April. We can't tell you yet, but we also want to shout out and show some love to our DC followers that have been coming to the advanced screenings of major releases that we've been sponsoring. We are a screening partner right now of STX, Sony, Universal, among many others. We have two upcoming screenings right now, both of which all of the passes have been taken because you guys really, really want
jumping
them. But
all
on March,
over it.
Dude, literally, March 10th at Regal Majestic, the new Vin Diesel actioneer based on the classic comic book character Bloodshot at 7 p.m. And of course, My Spy. They're trying to make Dave Bautista into like a, I don't know what they're trying to make him into. Find a word for me.
I'm on board with it. Whatever it is, because I fucking love Bautista.
My Spy at AMC Maza Gallery at 7 p.m. You guys have hit our page like crazy, dropping bombs. So all of those passes are taken. But we just want to thank you guys for every single bit of interaction you've been giving us. Seriously, killing it with these advanced screenings. and thank the studios for allowing the Epic Film Guys to be a part of these. It's just been so amazing. So yeah,
absolutely,
we're killing it as far as screenings are concerned, boys. So I'm very excited to see what we have in the future.
Absolutely. Huge, huge, huge thank you to Universal, to STX, and to Sony for the opportunity. I mean, just they have the opportunity to be able to sponsor and be part of these events and show these films early, to have the EFG name up there, and then to promote these films. It's absolutely great. It's absolutely wonderful. And I mean, just more great things to come. Just, I mean, that's the great thing about it. It's an exciting time to be an Epic Film Guy. It's an exciting time to be an Epic Film Guys fan. I mean, it's not as exciting to be an Epic Film Guy when you live up here in Endicott and nothing ever happens up here. Nobody's making any advanced screenings up here, which is kind of sad.
I mean, hey, and whatnot. Listen, I'm jealous of myself when, you know, I'm at a different event and we're doing an advanced screening with Universal Studios of The Invisible Man. Our logo is on the pass and it's being shown in the fucking Dolby Cinema. And I'm like, I can't even make my own event. You know, it's pretty amazing. I'm very humbled by this. I'm so appreciative of the opportunities we've gotten. And there's more to come from there. So thanks to everyone that's been supporting us. We're going to keep doing this film thing.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are. So we are going to go ahead and we are going to run over into a quick break. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we have a full review, a full breakdown of Lee Whannell's Invisible Man.
Dude, he's almost like the Hopester. I think he's in the doorway.
The weirdest thing to me. The weirdest thing watching this movie, just to kind of get into the head, is whenever I think of Lee Whannell, I can't help but think of him starring in Saw, you know, directed by James Wan, and him just being, you know, the little pervy photographer photographed across from Dr. Gordon in the bathroom. And given that really over the top performance that he gives in that movie, and like, I just imagined, like, I'm watching this movie and I just had a moment where I was sitting there watching him, like imagining him in the director's chair, just dressed as that character from Saw directing this movie. I don't know why. That's all I could picture when I picture Lee Whannell is.
Hey,
is
you're
just
our
that
Saw
character.
Guy. You're just our Saw wait. Guy on the show.
Can't wait. I'm getting more and more excited for Spiral, a Saw
yeah,
story.
Yeah, man. We know that you're excited for it.
Can't
so.
Wait. I cannot wait. I love my Saw movies. And they better not let me down again, because if they do, I'm going to find Costas Mandalore and smack him in the dick. I mean, that he's in this movie, but just because he deserves
at
it.
At least the movie will have a good tagline. You want to play, motherfucker? I mean,
there you go. Dude, all
they,
it is.
They literally they should have paid Samuel L. Jackson $1 million just for allowing him to be a part of that tagline. Like that there enough is enough. Exactly. That's all you need.
So yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we will be back on the other side of some EFG history for Lee Whannell's Invisible Man. Do not go away, or Loy Sauce will fucking twuff you.
This week in Epic Film History.
Yeah, it was not at the Arnold Classic where I met Arnold Schwarzenegger, Nick, but it was probably the most exciting moment in my entire life. He did a speech at an event that I went to, and then we went to the next room. We got to meet him, shake his hand, get a photograph with him. And I got to tell you, man, like, I've never felt that excited to meet anybody. He was super down to earth. He's been my hero since I was 10 years old. And like I said on my Facebook page when I posted the photograph, which I also posted to our Facebook, if I could go back in time and tell my 10-year-old self that someday you'll be standing in a room taking a professional photograph with Arnold Schwarzenegger, shaking his hand, I would have never believed it. What do you think, Nick? We've got Val Kilmer as Bruce Wayne in Batman. I know how I feel about him. I want to hear what you think about him.
I think he's fucking terrible.
As both or just Batman?
As both. As both. He seems, the entire time he's in this film, and this is probably the biggest detriment to the film for me, he seems completely detached and disinterested. Especially when he's playing Batman. His Bruce Wayne's a little bit better, I think, than his Batman. His line delivery is all fucking over the place. You can't even get a beat on him. Like, every time you want to like him for, like, one scene he's in, or one scene he's in here, or whatever, then he just goes and acts like a complete fuckwit. And the next one, you know, R, what's that stand for? Like,
Robin.
I know we make a lot of fun of that scene and a lot of the different scenes in that film, but it's like, it's line delivery like that that is just, it's cringeworthy. It's just,
I agree.
Despicable.
I think, I can agree.
Honestly,
with that.
If I had to pinpoint one part of this film that I dislike the most, it would probably be Kilmer's performance as Batman.
Thumbs down to Nick's new soundboard. I got this for you, Justin.
Fuck you, Pykel. You're a fucking piece of shit.
I'm smashing that thing. Seriously.
You ain't doing nothing.
Get some new sound clips. I'm sick of the same. It's only two episodes in. I'm already bored of them. I'm bored of it. I'm going to whoop you. I'm going to take that thing. I'm going to throw it.
Oh, my God.
I'll pay Emily for it. But
Bryan Singer, after an all-night bender of doing drugs and touching kids, whatever the fuck else he was doing, squats down over the toilet and just takes a fat, wet shit all over everything, all the goodwill that he built in Days of Future Past. He puts Apocalypse, who's one of the most iconic X-Men villains of all time. I'm not a comic reader, but I was a huge fan of the animated series, and Apocalypse was such an imposing, amazing villainous presence in that film. And you put him in this film, and you put Oscar Isaac, who's a fantastic actor, in that makeup.
An amazing
actor. And then
actor.
You give him nothing awesome to fucking do whatsoever. No, we're recording literally the night before release. The show goes live in like 8 hours.
Cutting it close, man.
So I'm just going to, as soon as we're done, I'm smashing it together and pushing it right out there to you guys. So whatever you're getting is raw, unfiltered. When Justin flubs, he's just going to have to flub, and it's going to sound like he's got a dick in his mouth. And no, I'm not going to push that button, Justin.
And hey, don't say I didn't show up. I came in for one last shot and told you to all the fuck yourself. It. Fuck you. I'm done. Fuck yourself. I hate you. Fuck off.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for hanging out with us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. Remember,
stop ganging up on me.
This is the movie podcast your mother warned you about. So be weary about what you're going to hear.
Ooh.
If you like what you're hearing, if you like what you're about to hear after you listen to it and you want to give us a review, the best thing you could do is head on over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review.
You're
and if you think we suck,
mother.
That's fine. Just pretend and lie. But at least it's going to help us in the long run. Like, seriously, we appreciate every single person
Absolutely.
That shows us some love. So be sure to give us a review on iTunes. But enough of that.
Enough.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's about time to get to our featured review on the show. Loy Sauce, this is a movie that both you and I were heavily, heavily anticipating. Lee Winnell's The Invisible Man. Why don't you tell our listeners what that film is all about?
Ooh.
So The Invisible Man is an update of the classic 1933 Universal film based on the novel by H.G. Wells. This is a film starring Elizabeth Moss as Cecilia Cass, who is trapped in a violent, controlling relationship with a wealthy and brilliant scientist. So she escapes in the dead of night basically disappears into hiding. But when her abusive ex commits suicide and leaves her a generous portion of his vast fortune, Cecilia suspects his death was a hoax. And as a series of eerie coincidences turns lethal, threatening the lives of those she loves, Cecilia's sanity begins to unravel as she desperately tries to prove that she is being hunted by someone nobody can see. Now, I'd be curious to get your perspective on this, guys, because this is a yet another attempt at Universal desperately trying to revitalize the monsters property that they have, the Universal Monsters property, Dracula, the Mummy, the Invisible Man, Creature from the Black Lagoon, for God's sakes. They've tried with films such as Van Helsing, Dracula Untold, the godforsaken 2017 Mummy reboot that was trash and absolute garbage. They've tried to take these monsters and turn them into like action schlock. So I think with Invisible Man, and I don't want to speak for anyone else here, but they finally got it right, or at least attempted to try to make the monsters scary in this day and age. Justin, I'm going to kick it over to you first because we watched this together. I know your reaction, but
now you hang on. You hang on just a minute there, Saucy, because we can't be dropping any spoilers in the first part of this review, so you know what time it is, baby.
Build that wall. Build that wall.
He did it.
Build that wall.
He had to.
No spoilers. There's a lot of stuff that we could spoil in this movie, so no spoilers for the first part of this review. Come back after we tear the wall down if you have not seen the movie to hear all the fun spoilery stuff on the other side. But yes.
Well, Universal created the monster movie as we know it today. And recently, with the help of Blumhouse, they just reinvented it. I think this movie is a modern horror masterpiece. Wow. I think this movie is one of the best modern horror movies ever made.
Now, when you say modern horror movies, what do you mean by that?
I mean modern day. I mean right now, like within the last 15 to 20 years. I walked out of this movie like someone punched the shit out of me the entire time I watched it. But I also felt like this movie was tailor-made for horror fans by someone that actually knows the source material, gave a shit about the source material, took it very seriously, and really cared about making something very, very special. Someone that had set out to make something that would literally reinvigorate the monster franchise, the one that you just talked about that was miserably dying in a trash heap somewhere that no one gave a shit about anymore. And for me, my first reaction to this movie was, it is something special. It will remain something special. It will be remembered for many, many years to come. Here's the thing. It's a very basic, simple idea. Blumhouse is known very well for this. Very low budget. Amazing director that's very hungry for the project. And some great acting. Not only did this movie have great acting, it had probably in the top five best female actors working in Hollywood today and television at the forefront of this film. You got someone in this movie that cared about this script, that really wanted to go with it, and it's fucking Elizabeth Moss. I mean, you can't ask for more than that with your project. You get her in anything you're doing, and you have an automatic win no matter what. And for me, I can't tell you enough. This movie is amazing. I love it as a horror fan first and as a critic second. How often do I get to say that a movie is that good? Once in a while, we'll get a Hereditary. You know what I mean? And in this situation, we get another movie along those lines. Loisos, I fucking loved this movie.
Wow. Well, we'll get into a little bit more of your reasons why, I guess, later. But Nick, you're awfully quiet over there. What did you think of The Invisible Man?
Maybe I was trying to stay invisible and now you just ruined the whole thing. Maybe I was trying to kind of slip into the character of this movie so I could try to elicit this really, really, really great review, maybe? I don't know. So,
do you guys remember that Clay Aiken song, "If I Was Invisible, I Would Just Watch You in Your Room"?
What the hell is wrong with you?
No. I don't remember that.
It's a very creepy
song.
Thank
God that I don't remember it because
anyway,
it's giving me the creeps.
How's your sex life?
They should have used that song in the soundtrack of this movie.
Oh my God in heaven. So, all right, let's get into this here, baby.
Shut up!
No, I'm kidding. I fucking love this movie.
Yes!
I love this movie. I wanted to see the look on Justin, like the color drain from his face as he heard the Rance theme kick off. Number one, we all on this show know how huge a fan of Elizabeth Moss I am. She is probably pound for pound, like Justin said, one of the best actresses working in Hollywood today. Anything that she is in, she has this ability, this ingenious ability to invest you so much in whatever she's doing. And I don't know if that's just the way that she digs into her characters or whatever the case may be, but you get somebody, and I've never seen a Lee Whannell directed film. I was talking about it at the end of the last segment. I only remember him just being the, you know, scrawny dude chained up in the bathroom next to Dr. Gordon in the first Saw movie, which of course he created and co-wrote with, you know, James Wan. So I've never seen, I know a lot of people talk very highly of Upgrade. It's a movie that I have not seen. So, you know,
Upgrade rules.
Went into this movie not having any frame of reference for exactly what Wan-El was going to bring to it from a directorial standpoint. And I got to say, I knew Moss was going to impress the shit out of me because she always does. She's incredible. That's not a check against her. Like, I'm not being like, oh, yeah, she was so great because she's always so great. Like, there's a lot of great, great layers to peel back from her performance. But what really impressed me about this movie, because I didn't have any frame of reference for it, is Wan-El's direction. This thing is directed so perfectly tight. He knows, and I've talked about this a number of times, especially when I watch horror movies like this, when you have a director that's allowed, and when you have a director that knows the power of just letting a camera linger, letting a camera pan across the room. And I think one of my favorite things that he does in this movie is you kind of almost get Adrian's perspective. It's just a camera either shooting a scene that just seems, it's just casually watching, or you just get like the camera panning over, and you as a viewer, you can almost picture somebody standing there in your head, even though there's nobody there. You know,
well,
that I think is the great power of what Wan-El does to this. And he uses those long camera sets, like the camera will just slowly tilt over, very slow, deliberate camera movements, longer takes where it's not just quickly cutting, like it's really just dialing in. And that ups the tension and the suspension and the suspense in this film so, so much for me. I mean, I was really, really blown out of the water by that. I love the performances in this film. And there's some stuff we're going to talk about when we get into spoilers as well that I think is so, so good. There's something specific I want to bring up with Justin when we get over there. But I adored this movie. I was surprised at how much I loved it. Like, I knew going in I would probably have a good time with it given the reactions I'd seen. But, man, just wow. Like, I'm always, horror is not my thing, so I'm always wowed when I walk out of a horror movie with that.
Well, you
kind
say
of
it's not your thing, but apparently all we have to do is find the right horror for you, and it is your thing.
And I will counter. I will say this movie has a lot of blood and gore in certain parts. I don't think this movie is really a horror movie. I think this movie definitely straddles the line of a horror and then a very, very tight, taut thriller. I think
100%. It's definitely a horror thriller. Yeah,
I love those elements, and I want to get back over to Loisas. I want to kick the ball back over to him and get more about what he loved about this film. But you know, I just, can I say before Loisas takes the ball and runs with it here, we would all fuck Aldous Hodge. I just want to put that out there right now. That man is fucking sexy, man. I don't even just notice how attractive men are most of the time, but that dude's fucking sexy. Like, Jesus Christ. He looks like a goddamn, like, tank. Disgust.
I mean, I don't think any of us have to agree or disagree to know that we absolutely would.
Thank you.
Like, just, we don't have to verbally say anything. Mostly, I think it's like, just a given.
Almost,
we're
like,
all thinking it.
I think,
we're all thinking
I think
it.
That,
let's
you know,
face
like
it.
I can recognize when a dude's attractive in a movie, but like I was watching this movie. That first scene where he shows up, I see him, I'm just like, holy fuck. Like, look at that motherfucker. Like, oh my God.
They also have him wearing the tightest t-shirts humanly
possible
to show off the
literally
chiseled.
Literally.
Anyway.
I was a thirsty boy in that theater. Yeah. Never mind. Continue. Take the ball away from me and run away with it.
Well, Nick, you bring up a very good point about Wan-El's direction. I think he had a vision of exactly what this movie was going to look like, feel like, sound like. I feel comfortable calling him a genius because he does with this movie what should have been done a long time ago at this monster franchise that Universal has been desperately flailing around with for decades. Make it low budget. This thing reportedly was around $7 million in terms of its budget. Make it scary. Modernize it for the audiences of today. And have pedigree in your cast, and market it well. All of those things this movie nails and just passes with flying colors. I very rarely get scared by horror movies. This movie kept me up the night that I watched it. Extremely effective horror filmmaking. Again, with Upgrade, which was also a Blumhouse produced film, that film, again, it was this sci-fi action thriller film, but again, low budget, nasty, brutal, badass film that took chances. So we're kind of in this I want to say it's a golden age. I mean, it's difficult to say because it's possible.
Or a new renaissance, a new horror renaissance, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, we've been saying that since, you know, 2015 with The Witch and things like that. And then, of course, you know, just this past year, we've had Blumhouse produce like Fantasy Island, and we've had like
Black Christmas, and we don't want to open those wounds back up, boy sauce. I know you were about to say it. You want to upset me. I'm about to talk about a movie I really loved, and you're trying to upset me here.
My point is, maybe I shouldn't speak too soon, but with this movie, this feels like a revelation. It feels like, again, with the but limited budget that it has, it looks and feels something like something way more expensive, way more produced than this movie. But it's so impressive consider the level of talent.
It makes nothing. And think about how many shots in this movie are just the camera looking at nothing, ostensibly. It makes it terrifying, and the score of this movie amplifies that 1,000-fold. I adored the fucking score in this movie. Oh, man,
I've been listening to it, Nick, ever since the day after I saw it. Benjamin Wallfish did the score, who also did the score for It Chapter 1 and Chapter 2. It's a brilliant score.
I can't say enough good things about the score of this movie. And then, you know, like I said before, with the deliberate, the long, slow camera movements, the longer takes where you're lingering shots on just emptiness, you feel that sense of foreboding. You feel that feeling that somebody is there watching, even though you can't see it on the screen. And that, I think, is why this film is as effective as it is. It's not just all the other elements in this film, which we, of course, will get to, but that, I think, needed
about this,
to be
Nick.
It.
And it makes
think
you...
about this. No, go ahead. I was going to say, the movie plays with this instinctual fear that we all have that we don't really know that is there.
Yeah.
Now, all these ghost movies, yeah, sure, we'll be scared if we hear, you know, the door creaking or whatever, and people think about ghosts and spirits, but there's that part of us that sometimes you'll just be sitting around alone, maybe it's late at night, you'll get this strange feeling like you're being watched, and you're looking around, and you're
tingle,
like...
Tingle, shiver up your spine.
You will literally look in the corner, the empty corner, or you'll look out the window, or you'll look at the door, and you're like... I don't feel anybody's presence, but I have this strange feeling. This movie plays off of that to a T perfectly, because that's instinctual to us. Even when you're out somewhere in public, you're like, someone is watching me. You're thinking about like who could be around the corner. I love the fact that the killer in this movie, or I should say the villain of this movie is invisible, but it plays around with it in ways that it had never been done before in the original Invisible Man or the Invisible Man sequels, or yes, even Hollow Man starring Kevin Bacon, which I do enjoy. People, stop hating. I know you're talking about Hollow Man. Hollow Man is legit. I like it, but it's nowhere near the level of terrifying, as scary, as suspenseful as this is. And so, I mean, for me, that's it played off those fears, which I have all the time. Loisos perfectly said, I could not sleep after I watched this movie. I literally laid in bed like for 2 hours just thinking about it. And yes, I did wake up and look at the fucking corner of the room in the darkness and be like, is somebody sitting there watching me?
Yeah, and that's Nick touched on it so beautifully, the camera movements in the film. I just want to talk a little bit more about that, because you'll be watching a scene and it's shot like at a medium shot of two characters talking, and then all of a sudden it'll cut to the camera just in a completely different location in the room. It's still on the same characters having their conversation, but the camera is now in a different place. So you're it's almost like the movie is training you to look at different parts of the screen depending on where the camera is. And that makes you just as paranoid as Elizabeth Moss's character in the film, because you're looking around for something that isn't there. How brilliant is that?
You don't know where it is. Exactly. You have no idea where it is, where it's going to come from, Where could it be? Is it even there or not? We don't. You don't know.
Yeah.
It does it so brilliantly. I have no words. I have no words.
I was so floored. And I think for this movie to have been as effective as it is, I think that that was what it needed to nail. Yes, you can have the performances. Yes, you can have everything else. But when you can just make an empty goddamn room, a shot with just nothing in it, when you can just make it that foreboding and create that sense of atmosphere. And that again, it's something that I have talked about so many times on this show lately in like the last year or two, I feel like. But you think about these directors that they know, they understand. Like, think about Ari Aster in the films that he's made, the deliberate, the long, slow shot, not cutting away, leaving the camera there, just letting the camera, letting the set, letting everything, all of these elements, the score, create the atmosphere for you instead of trying to create jump scares and cheap horror thrills, I would say, versus it takes real talent to create just straight up atmosphere in a
film.
And
every scare, yeah, and every scare in this film is earned. There is one moment in this film that literally made me shriek and cover my face. That doesn't happen really anymore.
Oh, I'm so eager
not
to get into this to
show.
Out what.
Yeah. It wasn't only you that happened to in that scene. It happened to me, you, and the gentleman that sat next to us, and everybody else in the theater. Like, it affected everybody. In that communal experience, everyone's feeling the same thing. You know you have a quality product. Like, you nailed it, dude. You fucking nailed it. You made everyone feel that feeling that you want to feel when you're watching this kind of movie. Again, I have no words. Like, you guys are going to have to understand. I got some shit for this on social media for saying this, but I do find this film to be a masterpiece. I do find this to be a modern horror classic. So you'll have to excuse me while I jizz all over this fucking thing because I loved it so much. I can't wait to see this thing again, but we haven't even gotten into spoilers yet. So I came too early. I'm sorry. I'm premature here with this.
If we want to, we can tear down the wall. We can move into some spoiler territory. Is there anything else we want? I mean, obviously, this is going to be a huge recommendation from all three of us here on the show. If you haven't seen this movie, and like I said, I'm not, and granted, I mean, you think about, I'm not the horror guy on the show, but how many different times now have horror movies popped up in my top 10 of the year list? This is an early contender. This is definitely, I mean, this is probably the best movie I've seen this year, not counting 1917, because that doesn't count for this year. But yeah, I mean, it's when horror movies are well made, when they're really, really, really well done, that's when I start paying attention. And this movie is so, so well made. So well made. And I cannot, legitimately, can we just start a separate award show for Elizabeth Moss just to give her awards for everything she does?
Because I mean, she's already an award-winning actress.
She's brilliant in this movie. This movie doesn't work. And we can say all that we want about Wannell and his amazing ability to create atmosphere and the score and all those great elements, which are all fantastic. But they could have all been... It could have been a J.A. Bayona in Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom kind of thing, where, you know, you have great direction, but everything else is lackluster. If you don't have a powerhouse performance at the center of this film from the caliber of actress that Elizabeth Moss is, then you don't have this movie. It's not nearly as effective because holy shit, her reactions, and it's not just like her verbal reactions, just the way that her eyes like can like just linger across the room and like look across the room. It's I don't know how she does it. I'm fascinated just watching her in anything that she does. Like, the craft of acting, like, I've never been more fascinated by the craft of acting than I have been watching her act in literally everything she does. She is a fucking treasure. I adore Elizabeth Moss. She
I think at this point,
amazing.
We've loved her enough on this. We've loved this movie enough. I think we need to tear down that wall and get into specifics.
You
want to
talk about Aldous Hodge again? Okay.
Well, because right. Otherwise we're just going to sit here and I'm just going to keep saying how much I love it and how it's a modern day horror classic. Right. Well, and you're going to say how you love her. And Lighthouse is going to say how
he wants to get twuffed.
Yes, that's right.
Let's
you
do
took
it.
The words right out of my mouth.
This wall, get it out of
tear
here.
Tear it down. Reagan smash. Reagan.
All spoilers are on the table officially, gentlemen. And Loisos, you dropped two tantalizing a tease, but Justin looks like he's gonna.
Well, no, I'm gonna hear him talk about this because I actually sat next to him in the theater.
I'm so excited for this. I have no idea what scene you're talking about. I have a couple ideas, but
well, I have to say you have to start from the beginning. And for me, I think the movie sets itself up perfectly with the first 25 minutes. I wanted to get your take on the opening of the film, because without the opening of this movie, the rest of it would not have worked. I think it literally is. I said it's a masterclass in horror directing and precisely, perfectly put together and calculated with suspense and tension.
Instantly. You're engaged. Like from the moment the film starts, you're already on the edge of your seat because the brilliant thing again about the relationship between Cecilia and Adrian, thank you, is that a lot of it is left up to audience imagination.
Yes.
Because I was expecting at some point in the film, or even the film to start out with, some kind of like flashback or context for how abusive Adrian is towards Cecilia, how abusive he could be to where she would want to leave. Because we get the sense from watching the trailers that he's abusive. He breaks through the car window and tries to, you know, drag her out of the car. He stalks her, all that stuff. But when you see the film, there is very little, telegraphing to the audience, okay, there's a scene where he's going to yell at her, and you know, there's none of that.
You know what it all relies on? Elizabeth Moss's performance. Every single bit of it relies on her performance and her ability to sell on her own the relate, like her reactions, like the fear that she has as she's sneaking around in that opening, as she's trying to be so quiet. Like, you immediately feel the fear and the terror that character feels about what could possibly happen if he wakes up.
Exactly. And then and that gives you everything that you need to know based on her performance and the context clues that are presented to you at the beginning. You get it immediately. So you're already invested. And again, the Wynnell just knows the exact amount of time for each shot to sink in. And get your brain furiously working about, like, oh my gosh, is he going to be around that corner? Oh my gosh, she kicked the dog bowl. That's the loudest noise I've ever heard in my life.
Bowl. That fucking dog bowl. I swear to God. Oh my
Justin
God.
Jumped 3 feet in the air.
I jumped 3 feet in the air. Then 2 minutes later, you're sitting there trying to eat a fucking Caesar salad next to me with a metal fork. And I turn to you and I'm like, shut the fuck up, dude. Literally, I'm scared right now. Like, me being the horror buff that I am, it's rare. It's like one out of, I'd say, eight.
That was the one thing
where
that,
I actually
that really,
get scared.
And I really, really want to hear what scene you guys are talking about. But like, when you talk about the opening of this film, like that for me was the final clincher. Like once she finally gets away, she's waiting on the road, and like you've got this weird sense of foreboding. Like, oh my God, nobody's going to come for her. Oh my God, is he going to find her? Like whatever. And then when she gets in the car, and then like all of a sudden you cut to that shot of him bolting out of the woods and smashes through the fucking window, trying to grab her and pull her out. Like that right there. So you've got her performance for like that first 5 minute opening. That whole thing, just dialing in the fear that character feels. And then that's where Wynnell punches you with it. Like, this is why she's trying to run. Like, now it brings all that fear home. It makes it all real. And, oh, just masterful fucking work. That's
very
why you're
real.
Synced into this fucking movie is right there, that opening, from bar none.
Well, yeah, it's very real. And it handles the subject matter on a very realistic and serious basis. And we got to get this out of the way, because this subject matter, guys, the theming of this movie could have been heavy-handed. We know Blumhouse.
That's what I wanted to bring up to you.
Yeah.
I thought about you reviewing Black Christmas when I was watching this movie, because I feel like, conversely, as opposed to that, where it's very heavy-handed and in your face, this is how you do it right.
Well, it's how you do it perfectly. Yeah. I mean, the whole movie, the whole theme of it is how to deal with abusive relationships and how those abusive relationships haunt us. You know, how that affects us as people and human beings, and what we're going to do with the rest of our lives and the aftermath of that. And in this case, quite literally, she's dealing with it because the abuse is still following her and trying to fucking kill her. But I mean, you know, it's done perfectly. It's not heavy-handed. It's not over the top. It does it in a very naturalistic way, which by the end of the movie, when you get there, the payoff is beautiful. And you're literally wanting to stand up and clap. I wanted to stand up and clap and applaud this movie at the end of it because I thought it was so well done. I loved the ending so much.
Well, I love the evolution of this character she's so afraid. She's so afraid. And slowly through the course of this movie, she takes back her agency. She takes control. And I love that. I love the strength that she starts to build through this role.
It's feminist without being pandering.
Exactly.
And and it doesn't treat the audience like morons, which is what Black Christmas did. Again, this gives you everything you need to know through context clues, through character interactions, through, again, even such details as the camera placement. Gives you everything you need to know without spelling it out for you.
I also think one of the most important aspects here that we need to get to is that the villain here, the title villain, is a bad motherfucker and pure evil person in the most realistic way possible. So many of these modern horror movies like dumb down these villains or try to make them anti-heroes. And I'm like, when you watch the original Invisible Man, yes, it is quite tame by modern standards. Claude Rains is brilliant as the character, but in no way, shape, or form is this person lethal enough, you know, to a modern viewer where like this guy could do some serious damage. In this case, you're totally frightened by what this character could do to you or what this character is going to do to the people that you're being introduced to that you're starting to care about in the film. I mean, there are some things that happen that we have to get to here with when they happen, you're outright fucking shocked and you're like, I can't believe I'm seeing this right now. And it's the most amazing thing ever.
I gotta know.
So the restaurant scene.
Oh, yeah. It's the restaurant scene. Yeah. It's one of the best things ever. It comes out of nowhere.
That did perfectly leave my jaw hanging open. I was just like,
none of us expected that. And I mean, when it happened, you're like, it literally, for me at least, said, this is a game changer. Like, they had the balls to do this. They did it. It worked perfectly. And at this point in time in the movie, you're like, all right, you take me wherever you want to go. Like, you got me, dude. You do whatever you want now.
And I love how bloody this film and Wan-El allows the film to be. In parts, there's not a ton of violence in this film, but when he chooses to really make it violent, it's a fucking bloodbath. Like, that's a nasty, violent, just horrible fucking scene.
Very mean-spirited. Very mean-spirited.
Horrible scene. Like, but yeah, that left my jaw open, literally on the floor. Loisos, go ahead. You were going to jump in there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, this movie taps into a lot of primal fears and anxieties that I have. Whenever I watch a movie, or like even hear about it in real life, because it does happen in real life. When someone is being framed or accused of something that they did not do and they cannot convince anyone otherwise, like they don't have any tangible proof to prove it to them otherwise, that gets me so anxious. And especially during this movie when... The brilliant thing about this movie is that it takes the concept of the Invisible Man and it modernizes it for the modern audience, especially in terms of abusive relationships and especially gaslighting, which for those of you who I don't know if many people have heard this term before, maybe they have, maybe they haven't, but it's a form of psychological manipulation in which someone makes you question your own sanity. Uses tactics, manipulation and tactics to make you think that you're crazy, essentially. And that's what Adrian does to Cecilia in their relationship. And then, you know, during his stalking and his revenge against her, he takes it to the next level by literally, and again, we're in spoilers here, but literally slitting his sister's throat, placing the knife in her hands, and she's being dragged away by... You know, and she's being institutionalized for the murder of her sister. But from all, you know, anyone can see, she did it.
Yeah.
But she's innocent. And we, the audience, know that. But how is she going to convince them? How are, like, we're powerless to do anything. So it's, again, masterclass in tension and producing anxiety in your audience.
And that's where you can see Winnell showing a huge love letter to Terminator 2. Once we get into that mental hospital,
she's pure
Sarah Connor. And there's some scenes in the hallway there, those action scenes when the cops start coming in, when shit starts hitting the fan. Because obviously, ladies and gentlemen, we're not going to get into every fucking detail in this movie. We're not going to walk you through it. You need to see this movie.
Do it, please.
If you're at this point, you've probably already seen it.
For the love of God.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you've seen it, because we just spoiled the best part of the movie.
I'm just saying,
for you.
Well, a lot of people, some people are like, I don't want to see the movie. I just want to hear these assholes talk about it. But I mean, he wears his influence on his sleeve there with those scenes. But I mean, we see this character like really change so much, like, and come out of her shell throughout the entire thing. And by the end point of the movie, you totally understand where they're going here. What I love so much about this movie is that there's so little explanation or backstory into the technology that allows him to become invisible.
You don't need it.
It's one scene, but in most movies, you guys know what I'm talking about. You would have to have an explanation scene, or like you said earlier, Loisos, a flashback to the abuse, where normally you'd be like, oh, well, there's got to be a flashback to him. Like, well, this is the technology I'm creating, and like him being told that he can't create it, or it's not going to work.
I think the film gives you enough, because it gives you, like, when it gives you the newspaper clipping of his death, it's like optics expert. Like, it drops enough of those Easter eggs along the way to be like, he's an expert in optics. So you immediately, as a viewer, can connect that thread in your own mind. This film doesn't pander. It knows you're smart.
I mean, if you pay attention.
if you're a smart enough person, you can thread that through and be like, okay, he's an optics expert. So clearly his invisibility tech that he comes up with is going to have something to do with optics, which it does. You know, that's all you need. It's all you need in this film. And, you know, I had my moments in the film. I was talking to our good buddy Colby Mack over on Twitter earlier about this. And you know how much we absolutely love Colby on the show. I mean, he howls every time Loisos comes into the damn room. Where is he? Hang on.
Ow!
There he is. So, but I was talking to him about it, and, you know, he was talking about people, like, nitpicking the film. And I did have some moments in the theater when I was nitpicking the film as well. But it doesn't detract from my overall experience with the film because of all of the great elements at play in this film. Yes, I do think it's really weird that this suit doesn't make any noise, that this dude is simultaneously a superhero and a ninja at different times in the movie, if the plot needs him to be. Some of those elements, I think, aren't the best, but I think that what this film does right, it does so right, and it invests you so well in what you're watching that you don't really care so much. You know what I mean? I mean, for me, like, I see, like, that there are nits to pick, but every movie has nits to pick. But I think that it doesn't matter in this movie. I think that in this movie, you're just like, you're along for the ride. You know, you're there. You know, and at least for me, like, I didn't let any of that stuff bother me, you know. And it's the same thing with, like, the invisibility tech. Like, all you need to know is, like, it's an invisibility suit. Wait, why you need more than that? Why? We don't need a whole convoluted backstory. What's more important is the horror, the suspense, the tension that we're going to create in this story and in this setup. We don't need an extended 20 minutes of him developing the optical tech to do this. It would be pointless.
Which you
be
would
wasted.
See. Exactly. Which is what you would normally see had Universal not allowed Blumhouse to be a part of this and they tried to make this movie on their own. I damn well guarantee you we would have seen all of that shit you just mentioned, where it's like, he's developing the suit and we're going to force feed you all of this and you're going to be spoon fed everything. Where in this movie, it's got an artistry to it and it's done where they're not insulting your intelligence. They're expecting you as an audience member to be able to follow along and understand very, very basic information. Listen, the film's about abuse, and it's using the Invisible Man character and that franchise as a vehicle to tell this story, and it does it brilliantly. More brilliantly than you ever see most modern mainstream horror films ever get to. I'm ready to put a stamp on this thing, because honestly, guys, this could be a 2-hour long review with this movie. There's so much to flesh out here.
Yeah, we could wax on about so many of the other different elements of the film.
Yeah, so I'm just going to put my stamp on it right now. For me, I'm giving Lee Winnell's The Invisible Man a 9 out of 10. It's close to a perfect rating for me. I mean, I actually have nothing negative to say about it at all whatsoever. Zero. Zip. Suspenseful.
So why not a 10 out of 10, Justin?
Well, because here's the thing. I need time to kind of like let it stew, let it sit. I want to see it another time. You guys know I've only given a film a 10 out of 10 less than 5 times on this show in the history of the Epic Film Guys. 9 out of 10 is the highest rating I almost usually give, because I've already admitted on social media, this movie is one of my favorite modern horror films of all time. It will go down as one of my favorite films of all time. You know, maybe top 50, maybe top. Give me that look all you fucking want, dude. I'm all about how the film makes me feel and how my experiences in the theater when I watch it. And this film had me on the edge of my seat. It frightened me. It terrified me. I love the performances. I love the camera work, the score. Everything about this movie is absolutely near perfect for me. 9 out of 10 for The Invisible Man. I can't wait to see this thing again.
Saucy, I will boot it over to you.
Well, Justin, I made a face.
Tough this movie, Loy Sauce.
I made a face not to argue with you, but just
I'll argue those with are them.
those are bold words. For me, you mentioned it earlier, Justin. I think it would have been very easy to make the Invisible Man the main character or the protagonist of the film. But I think Lee Winnell wisely makes him the monster, focuses on Elizabeth Moss's character and gives her an arc for this story of her journey overcoming abuse and trauma. I think it modernizes like the classic fear of the Invisible Man to a very timely effect. And it taps into, again, not just the fear of the monster, the Invisible Man, but so much of what we deal with in our modern life, surveillance, you know, social media, stalking, things like that. So I think the movie's absolutely brilliant. Perfect suspense. Elizabeth Moss is a powerhouse. And I'm really curious to see what comes out of this. Are we going to see more Blumhouse produced Universal monster movies? What's that going to look like? Is Winnell going to be involved? Please God.
Well,
let him
I mean,
be
he
involved.
Just got a 2-year deal. He just got a 2-year contract with Blumhouse. He just signed it the other day. So something's going on with that.
Here's all you have to do is, I mean, you have obviously our Lord and Savior, James Wan, as Loy Sauce has referred to him numerous times on the show. He's definitely proven his pedigree in modern horror. Lee Winnell now, I mean, obviously, like I said, both of them created Saw. And now that he
Insidious.
Is proving his own pedigree in directing modern horror. 100%. Give Wan and Winnell the Universal Monsters franchise. Give it all to them. Give it
Absolutely.
All. And walk the
I would
fuck
love
away
that.
From it. Leave it in their hands because they will make just genius stuff out of it. It's just, yeah, do it, please.
100%. I do think the movie drags somewhat in its third act as it gets toward its conclusion, but the conclusion itself is remarkable.
I don't want to even spoil anything about it, but holy fuck, I love the ending of this movie. I literally almost wanted to jump out of my seat and cheer at the ending of this fucking movie.
My question to you guys is this, and I said this as soon as we walked out of the theater, and apparently Loy Sauce totally forgot that this was news, but the week after the trailer for this landed, Universal announced that The Invisible Woman was coming out, starring and being directed by Elizabeth Banks.
See, that's...
And I'm like, wait a minute. After watching this movie, I'm like, and I'm not going to ruin anything for people, but seriously, at the end of this movie, you're like, wait a minute, that makes no sense to what I just watched, because I'm just going to say it. We have our Invisible Woman now. Why is that even part... What are you doing?
I want to say that film is in the garbage can at this point.
I sure hope so, because if anything's going to happen with this franchise anymore, and you're going to put Invisible in the name of any movie, it better damn well have Moss involved and Winnell as a producer or something, because by the end of this movie, I'm ready to see where that character is going to go next.
9 out of 10 for me as well.
So I'm going to give this movie an 8 out of 10. I really, really, really love this movie. There is one thing, and I don't want to spoil specifically because it's like a huge plot spoiler in the film, but there's one character, we'll say, there's one character who beats the shit out of Aldous Hodge's character in the film. which I did not buy at all whatsoever. I think the scene was over the top violent. Like, when you get to that revelation in the film, like I said, I don't want to spoil it past that, but that scene to me, I was just like, are you fucking serious right now? Like, that was like probably the only scene in this movie where I was just like, eh. But I mean, again, this thing is just picture perfect for the most part, from head to toe, from beginning to end. I absolutely, absolutely adored this movie.
From visible to invisible.
God damn it. We got to leave it right on that. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so, so much for hanging out for our review of The Invisible Man. Gentlemen, is that it? Are we ready to wrap out the show here?
Oh, but I was having so much fun.
I know. I know. Sometimes, don't you wish we could just record forever? Don't you wish, I get sometimes these podcasts are like, man, we've got like 6 episodes banked. Like, we're going to take like a month off. We got 6 episodes. We've recorded a whole bunch of stuff in one sitting. But no, we're jerks and we have to do all this current events bullshit. So we got to comment on all the films that are out right now. So sometimes it can get to be a little bit of a grind. Justin's hair looks absolutely insane right now. Please don't do that. God damn
it's
it.
It's time for bed.
In a few minutes, bitch.
No.
I'm ready for bed.
In a few minutes, bitch. So, ladies and gentlemen, we love you so, so much. We appreciate you listening and tuning into the show. If this is your first time, we're thrilled to have you. Loy Sauce, please tell the good people where they can find us if they want to keep tuning in to this little show of guys that film epic words. Yes, and...
You're out of them.
Carry the 7.
Yes, Nick. Thank you very much. You all can find us wherever you listen to good podcasts or otherwise. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean, wherever. And also, if you're stopping by iTunes to listen to the show, be sure to leave us 5-star review.
Be sure to live it. No, you were right the first time.
Be sure to live us.
Live it.
Eat, sleep, breathe, live nothing but epic film, guys. Leave us a 5-star review. It helps us out very greatly, and we appreciate it. You can also follow us on our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Follow us for all the updated information on the show.
On the show.
And our fan group as well on Facebook, The Hopesters Dumpster.
It's
where,
a scary place.
Yeah, it's a deep, dark, dingy
place.
Where
Mr. Blaston flows like rivers. Did I say Mr. Blaston?
We need to go to bed.
Good
job. Time for bed.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, we love you. We really, really do appreciate you taking the time to check out this show. Let us know on social media what you thought of Lee Whannell's Invisible Man. Were we right? Were we wrong? Did you hate
the
movie?
Right.
And you just want to twuff us until we submit to your whims. We love you. Thank you so, so much out there, everybody, for listening. And until next time.
I sucked a dick last night.
Wow. We will see you
at the movies.
Stop ganging up on me.
Get out of here, Denny.